Good afternoon, everyone. Would you like to be a child again? You know, I've heard a lot of guys say, oh, I wished I was a kid again and knew what I know now. But, you know, if you were a child again, you wouldn't know what you know now. You know, childhood, many have fond memories of childhood. You know, carefree, lack of responsibility, good times. But you know, it's not always that way. Childhood, if you think about it, begins in travail. You know, when that baby is born, going through the birth channel, it's under a lot of stress, a lot of strain. They even have monitors now. They monitor the heartbeat. The stress gets too high. They know something's got to be done. And of course, the mother's going through pain. So childhood begins with a lot of travail. We see in Genesis chapter 3, in verse 16, says, to the woman he said, I will greatly multiply your sorrow and your conception. I mean, that's saying to me that maybe originally created, it would not had to have been that bad. In pain you shall bring forth children, and your desire shall be for your husband, and he shall rule over you. All you ladies, keep that in mind. That was a prophecy. You can't change it. I'm sorry. No, but childhood, you know, it begins in travail. And God says in sorrow you bring forth children. And in John chapter 16, I'd like to read there real quickly. In John chapter 16. John 16 in verse 21 says, a woman when she is in labor has sorrow because her hour has come. But as soon as she has given birth to the child, she no longer remembers the anguish for joy that a human being has been born into the world. And I've witnessed childbirth. We've had five children. I've been there. And it's that way. You know, there's sorrow, and then there's a child is born, and all that seems to be forgotten for a little while. In verse 22, therefore, you now have sorrow, but I will see you again, and your heart will rejoice, and your joy no one will take for you. Then Christ is talking to his disciples, and he says, therefore, you now have sorrow. He's comparing it to childbirth and being a child. You know, childhood is fun and you have a lot of fond memories, but you know, it involves discipline too. Frankly, I would not want to go back and live through childhood. I think I had great parents, but that's not one of my desires. I was driving, listening to a talk show, and they were talking about how mothers, you know, how loving mothers took care of the children. And it's mostly men, of course, calling in. And then I want to stress here, these were men talking about fine mothers that they respected and loved. But they begin to talk about the discipline that their mothers and how they gave it to them. And they were having a big time. This one guy called in, he said, a piece of water hose doubled up. And I mean, it got pretty funny. He said, boy, whatever happened to be there? And, you know, you can get their attention. So you kids remember that if you leave any piece of water hose laying around. How about extension cords? Well, you know, extension cords now are real floppy. But during World War II, you know, the rubber was rationed. And as I remember, those old cords, they looked like they had a fiber or something on them. They were striped. They were kind of thick. Double that thing over and whop yourself on the leg. And I thought one guy was pretty funny. Him and his brothers in the bedroom, and they were just slinging it out, fighting and just really hating one another. And, of course, it was a boys' room, and on the wall they had this bullwhip wrapped up, hanging on a nail, you know, just kind of something that boys would like. And all at once, Mom comes busting in there, and, of course, what's handy? She grabs that rolled-up bullwhip, goes into them, and gets their attention real quick. And he said after Mom went out, then he said they just busted out laughing. They were crying and laughing. They were good buddies again. So, you know, Mom has a way of getting children's attention. They need it. Of course, there's the old standby, the coat hanger. I don't recommend that. And one, my youngest daughter was telling us that, I don't know where I was. I wasn't there, but they were painting a room. And my wife was painting, I guess the girls, and Darlene, most of you know her, she was in there being a pain and just not doing the right thing. And all at once, that gentle Mimi over there grabs a paint roller and goes at it. I don't know if it's the one with paint in it or what, but she got her attention. And, you know, childhood has, it has times where it's not that great. And some of you might have read one of James Dobson's books. He's telling about his mom. She'd come home from church, taking off her girdle, laid it on the bed. Now, if there's anybody in here under 60 years old, a girdle, it was like a stretchy thing. They put it around them. But the thing about that thing had little things hanging down with little steel clips on them. You know, to get a hold of the hose, she grabbed that. You know, that'd be like a cat of nine tails. She got his attention. But, you know, childhood and Christian life isn't all roses, as we all know. And we're all children of God. You know, a Christian's life is a narrow and hard way at times. I don't want to portray it as being all down and sorrow, because I think it's a very joyful way of life. But, you know, it's not the popular way. It's definitely not the popular way. It's not the easy way. Let's look in Matthew chapter 7. Matthew chapter 7, and of course, one thing I forgot, the old standby, the fly swatter. Man, I get that used on me still. Matthew 7, and not the floppy end either. Okay, Matthew chapter 7, verse 13. Jesus said, "Enter by the narrow gate, for wide is the gate and broad is the way that leads to destruction, and there are many who go in by that way." In verse 14, "Because narrow is the gate and difficult or confined, you know, is the way which leads to life, and there are few who find it." Notice it says narrow. You know, the word narrow, as far as I can tell, studying this, it means like to crowd, like you're crowded. You're like you're afflicted. It's like a throng. If you've ever been just in a mass of people, like probably this year when you went to buy your Christmas presents and you wanted that special gift that's not many, and people were just shoving you and crowding you, and there's only five left, and there's 50 people trying to get them. In other words, it's crowded. It's like a throng. It's suffer and tribulation and trouble. It's not the easy way. The easy way would be to go the way of the world. My daughter was house setting, and of course it was a nice house and a huge Christmas tree, you know, like you'd think it'd be in some nice store. Presents all around it. Her little son, 4 years old, he's seeing all those presents. And he said, "Well, let's open the presents." And she said, "Garrett, we don't do Christmas. We don't believe in Christmas." And he comes right back and says, "I do." I mean, the easy way is do it. I mean, the young children have to face that trial. You know, in a narrow and a straight way, you don't have much leeway. You don't have much room. You're narrow. You're going down a small way, like exploring a cave. Some people do that as a hobby, and you know, sometimes they're crawling through a tight place. They're muddy. They've got mud on them. They're dirty. And then every once in a while, there's a larger room, and they can stand up. Well, Christ was kind of saying that that is a Christian's life. At times, it's narrow, and it's hard. In Hebrews chapter 11, we see that it's not anything new. When God has called people, they've had to face the same as we do. Some people faced worse, some less. Hebrews chapter 11, verse 24 says, "By faith, Moses, when he became of age, refused to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter." Here's a man who was son of a king. Son of Pharaoh's daughter. He could have had what he wanted. 25, "choosing rather to suffer affliction with the people of God than to enjoy the passing pleasure of sin." And notice it is a passing pleasure. Like the young boy, the passing pleasure to open the presents, do the Christmas. But as here, Moses was a good comparison and example that he had to choose the narrow way. Egypt was the broad way. And we, of course, we have to face the same thing. We are faced most every day with either the narrow way or the broad way. And there are good times, and sometimes followed by hard times. Also in Revelation chapter 13, this is going to carry on to the return of Christ. And we're not suffering anything that hasn't been required of others or will not be required in the future. Revelation chapter 13, verse 17. "And that no one may buy or sell except one who has the mark or the name of the beast or the number of his name." Could not buy or sell. If you're in business, if you own a retail business, I say it's very hard to close that business on Saturday and not participate in Christmas. Christmas is huge business. Saturday's the big day of the week for business. You know, the Friday after Thanksgiving is called Black Friday because business says that is the day they get into the black out of the red, where they actually begin to make money. Black Friday. And it's because of the Christmas business. And if you're unable to participate in that as a business, then if God's not there by taking up the slack, you're not going to make it. Years ago, we knew a couple that he owned a service station, and they were in the church. Of course, he closed on Saturday. Well, in a, it was a rural area, and of course, that's when the farmers all came in, get their car serviced, get your car washed, fill up with gas for Sunday. You know, that was the big day, and he's closed. You could not buy, and if you can't sell, then you can't buy. You don't have anything to buy with. Hebrews chapter 12. Christian way of life is at times a narrow and hard way. Hebrews chapter 12 in verse 1. It says, therefore we also, since we are surrounded by so great a cloud of witnesses, let us lay aside every weight and the sin which so easily ensnares us. That's what caught my eye was it says, sin which so easily ensnares us. That's telling me that is the easy way. That is the broad way. Let us run with endurance the race that is set before us. The other way takes endurance. It's harder. And don't mistake that all people face hardships in life. But as God teaches us, we're going to face hardships, but us face them for the right reason. But the Christian way of life is kind of swimming upstream a lot of the time. Also, a Christian is, I guess you could say, a Christian is like a hated minority. Let's look at Romans chapter 1. And that also, of course, makes the way harder. Not every minute, not all the time, but it's there. And it's like it's something that just stays with you over time. And you have relief and you have God's blessing, but it's always there to stay within the straight and narrow. Romans chapter 1 and verse 30 says, backbiters, haters of God, violent, proud, boaster, inventor of evil things, disobedient to parents. Notice it says, haters of God. God is hated. This world hates God, even though they would claim to worship God and love God. In reality, in their heart, what they want to do would make them a hater of God. And of course, if they hate God, what would they hate of his offspring? In John 15, in verse 18, John 15, in verse 18, John 15, 18, I don't know if I'm in the right place. I think I'm in, got the wrong scripture. No, I'm in the wrong book. I'll tell you what, those fly swatters mess your mind up. John 15:18, if the world hates you, you know that it hated me before it hated you. Notice in verse 19, if you were the world would love its own. Yet because you are not of the world, but I choose you out of the world, therefore the world hates you. You know, Christ said the world hated him, and it's going to hate you. Well, everyone's not throwing rotten eggs and kicking you everywhere you go. But the word means like, pursued with hatred at times. I mean, we've known members that's had plates broke over their head and all kinds of things. That does happen. But also the word means like to detest, to love less. or to slight. You know, if you the young people in school, they have a good friend on Friday, and then by Monday when they come back to school, it's like they're slighted. Because Friday night, a lot of things happened. Saturday with friends, and they weren't there. And it's like you just come back and you're kind of slighted. Or you come back to work and you weren't able to take part in whatever was going on, maybe on the Sabbath, or take part in things that we just cannot do. And so you kind of then you're slighted. You're like disregarded. Oh, yeah. You know, indifference. That's how the world would hate you. You're just out of the, you're out of the circle. You're out of the loop because of certain things that it requires to be a Christian. And of course, if God is hated, Jesus is hated, he's saying, you will be hated also. Let's look at John 17, just over a page, in verse 14. I have given them your word, and the world has hated them because they are not of the world, just as I am not of the world. If you're not part of the world, you're just cut off in certain areas. That doesn't mean that you, no one likes you. That doesn't mean that you're not spoken well of, but you're slighted. And even to the extent of actually being hated, depends on the personalities you're dealing with. That you'll be hated. And also, I wanted to look at Matthew chapter 10. Some people get the picture that a Christian is a gloom and doom life. Christ was a man of sorrow, so all the Christians are constantly in sorrow and downbeaten and trodden. But God is very upfront, and he wants people to know what to expect. He promises to bless. Read the Psalms, you know. You're going to be blessed. He's going to see you through. But he also wants to be upfront and honest about what you're going to have to face and not be surprised by these things totally. Matthew 10, verse 22. And you will be hated by all for my name's sake, but he who endures to the end will be saved. But when they persecute you in this city, flee to another. For assuredly, I say to you, you will not have gone through the cities of Israel before the Son of Man comes. And when you preach the truth, say about Christmas, it's going to cause some people to hate you. Just this past week, a man was talking to me, and he said, "Is that Good News magazine? Is that your church?" Yeah, he said, "Well, I was listening to the radio, and they was talking about Christmas and interviewing a man who wrote the booklet." So I didn't hear it. I think David Nunn usually hears it. I was going to ask him about it. But apparently they had a show, those of you that heard it, and the author of the Christmas booklet, like, he called in, and then they asked him questions about it. But Christmas is very dear to people. And if you preach the truth about that, a lot of times you're not making that many friends. And, you know how human nature is. You'd be stepping all over traditions, family beliefs. And you got to be wise as serpents and harmless as doves when it comes to that. And you learn by experience how to handle those situations. But Christ wants you to know that these things will happen, that you could be hated at times. But I'd like to say, I hope when we are hated, it's for the right reason. I'd like to look at Daniel chapter 6, that it's for the reason that God says, because sometimes, as humans, we do some things that we get hated for that really not have anything to do with Christianity. But notice Daniel in Daniel 6 in verse 3. Daniel 6, verse 3. Then this Daniel distinguished himself above the governors. That's just a characteristic of a Christian. It's distinguished. It's different. And satraps, because of an excellent spirit was in him, and the king gave thought to setting him over the whole realm. So in verse 4, so the governors sought to find some charge against Daniel concerning the kingdom, but they could not find no charge or fault. That's where we want to be. In our life, we want to be where they can't find the fault in our life. Oh, yeah, he tells some wild stories. He lies. We don't want to be caught in that. Or, you know, he'll pick up things at work or, you know, take God's name in vain or whatever. We don't want to be able someone to point at us for that. It says they could not find a charge or fault because he was faithful, nor was there any error or fault found in him. In other words, he was faithful in his work. He wasn't bad-mouthing the boss. He wasn't being lazy on the job. He was doing everything he should. That's the way we should be. Then these men said, we shall not find any charge against this Daniel, in verse 5, unless we find it against him concerning the law of his God. And that's where we should come in. If they're going to hate us, it should be concerning the law of our God, because we're keeping that and because we're obeying God. Not just be hated because we're just kind of that kind of person that people love to hate. Also, turn to 1 Corinthians chapter 1. 1 Corinthians chapter 1. In verse 26, we sing about this, we know about it. 1 Corinthians 1:26, for you see your calling, brethren, that not many wise according to the flesh, not many mighty, not many noble are called. But verse 27, but God has chosen the foolish things of the world. So, you know, we can expect at times we do some things that maybe a lot of people in the world would be smarter and not do, to put to shame the wise. And God has chosen the weak things of the world to put to shame the things which are mighty, and the base things of the world, and the things which are despised, God has chosen. So, you know, also we're going to be a despised minority at times. You know, the despised aren't the majority, or they wouldn't be despised, would they? They're small. You know, they're traveling a road that's not that much traveled. I've told the story of when we were in Hawaii one time, we found this sign said this waterfall's up here, and here's this nice trail going there. I think it was maybe even blacktop at first. And you start going, and it doesn't tell you how far that thing is, but it's way out there. And as you go, this trail gets worse and worse because people start turning back. They're not using it. I mean, the woods is taking it over. It's not traveled. Pretty soon you're crawling through trees. You're stepping over logs. And then when you finally get, you can see that, hey, people are, they start out on the trail, but they don't finish it. Because, you know, hey, this is tougher and longer than I thought. This is all this hating and taking this narrow, hard way is tougher than I thought. So people start turning back. We finally got there, and there it was. Beautiful waterfall, pool for swimming. You know, it was all there when we finally got there. And, of course, my wife had a special treat. This European guy was there. You know, he was really a good one. And he just decides to go swimming, just strips off, dives in. There are the girls and my wife, eyes bugging out. And hers was bugging out more than any of them, I can tell you. But, I mean, the reward was there, but the trail got narrower and narrower and narrower, and more people were turning back. So it's a narrow, hard road. And, you know, we know we'll be speaking evil of. We all have. Most of you know you have been at times. And, you know, they're crazy. They do this or that. And so I can't go through all those scriptures, but I would like to look at Revelation chapter 12. Revelation chapter 12, verse 17. And it says, and the dragon was enraged with the woman. Now, the real hater is right here. Now, this being is enraged, not just, you know, slighting us. This being is enraged with the woman, and he went to make war with the rest of her offspring who keep the commandments of God and have the testimony of Jesus Christ. That is the reason why it's a narrow and hard way. One of the reasons is because of this great spirit being who has so much hate for God, and it's just passed right on down to anyone that would serve God. You know, and also I'd like to, this brings to mind, Satan is really there after God's people. And he has a lot of people already, and so it's not the same. That you need to remember that you are a special target. So you can get yourself set up at times because he's there to do some things that you should not do. You are a special target. One of our daughters was talking with some other young people and that were also from Sabbath-keeping churches, not any that we're affiliated with. But they said, well, growing up, some of the worst examples they saw were in the church. Well, you know, Satan does. He targets people who are trying to obey him. And they regrettably, sometimes those are some of the worst examples. But, you know, my wife was explaining to her, said, well, look who God calls. He says he calls the base and the low, and plus Satan is there putting more pressure on than on the average person because the Christian is the target. So, you know, keep that in mind. It's how important it is that we set a good example. And even though at times we have a lot of pressure to go the broad way and to just throw in the towel. You know, Christ has called us at times to a difficult life. It's a life of much happiness and joy, but at times it can be difficult and hard. But, you know, good things come from struggle. When that baby is born, it's been a struggle, but a great thing has come from it. And there's joy then. You know, we're called to walk that straight and narrow. That's our calling. That's, you know, like I say, that's your lot in life. There's no turning back. That's your calling. And, you know, that calling, we know that Christ has told us that, that I think is, as he may have put it, hard is the way that leads to life.